sure you're paying attention. Could you hear me? I want to thank you all for being here tonight. I want to thank Sam for inviting me, Daniel for giving me a heads up about 2 weeks ago. He says, hey, would you like to speak out at a place out on Jump Off Junction, Virginia? I didn't even know where this place was at. And I said, certainly. It's another little thing that we all, I guess, have to do if we want to maintain our recovery. And I want to introduce myself. My name is Larry, a real alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. My sobriety date is November 5th, 1977. I got sober in San Diego. I have a home group in Fredericksburg. I got there 12 years ago. And I have a home group that's at the hospital on Friday nights, Mary Washington, called the Happy Hour Group. I have a sponsor in San Diego where I got sober, and I have a sponsor in Fredericksburg. You often hear people talk about calling their sponsors. I don't call mine. I see them at meetings. That's what they told me to do. If I have something to discuss, it's not on a text, okay? And so I'm going to try to give you a little brief story about yours truly. My name is Larry, a real alcoholic. And I am a miracle. I'm one of those individuals who drank every day just before I got here. I'm here because this woman that I slept with called a wife, told me, I think you got a drinking problem. And I did not know one person in recovery when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, not one. And I certainly couldn't be an alcoholic. A lot of ego, a lot of pride, a lot of denial. I had spent 21 years in the military, of the Special Forces. I was a retired naval officer. I owned a beautiful home. I had a beautiful wife, two beautiful cars in the garage, a good job. How could I possibly be an alcoholic? Well, I'm going to begin my story as to how it is that I happen to be here. I happen to be one of those individuals that was raised in a very large home. I was number 13 of 13 children. My father had a third grade education. My mother had an eighth grade education. Both of them had a tremendous work ethic. And they told me from the time I was a small kid that nothing comes for free. Nothing is free. You have to work for whatever it is you're going to get. And I never forgot that. You know, I was above average student in school. I used to believe that if I did what I was told to do, I was raised in a parochial school system. I went to a parochial right through 13 years of that, into a parochial college. I went to Regis College in Denver. And it amazes me as to how my life had turned. You're looking at a person who was supposed to go to the seminary and become a Jesuit priest, by the way. And this is what I tell folks jokingly. You know, if I'd have stuck around and gone to the seminary, I'd have probably been an archbishop by now. At least. Minimum Monsignor, okay? But here I am in Jump Off Junction, Virginia, sharing with a bunch of folks my alcoholic problem, okay? Which is the miracle I want to talk about tonight. I'm not ashamed about being an alcoholic. I thought that an alcoholic was something I didn't want to be. I got here not wanting to be. I kicked. I fought the idea that maybe, just maybe, I might be an alcoholic. And so, after spending 21 years in the military and having an extremely successful military life, professionally I was doing real well. I ended up at Balboa Naval Hospital in San Diego, which is a military hospital, obviously. And I was put in there with a bunch of alcoholic, drug addict, active duty, retired, and military dependents who all had a drinking or drug problem. And I couldn't wrap my head around that. I just couldn't. How could I possibly be? You're going to find out that my drunk-a-log isn't very long, because I don't have a long drunk-a-log. I drank enough to get me here. You know, we all know how to get drunk. I did not know how to get sober. I knew how to stop drinking, but I didn't know how to stay stopped. Okay? I get this hospital, and they introduce me to this individual who was the director of this alcoholic rehabilitation unit. His name was Dr. Comer. And here I'm a retired naval officer, and I wanted to be treated as such. Wrong. They gave me a piece of duct tape that said Larry on it, right there. Big old gray piece of duct tape with a piece of felt pencil that had my name on it. I had enlisted guys calling me Larry, which made just the hair stand up in the back of my neck, okay? Larry, what I'm hearing. Well, I was exposed to you folks because they would run us out to the Ville every night. And they would take us to meetings in hospitals, schools, and rehab centers and halfway houses. And these were little buses that they took us to different types of meetings, speakers meetings, gay meetings, Mexican meetings, totally black meetings. You know, all sorts of meetings. We had even a place we called the Plush Toad. That's where all the money was. It was up in La Jolla, the higher part of San Diego where the elite live. You know, Mercedes, BMWs, Rolls Royces. And he took us to all these meetings, and I found out that they all had something in common. This book right here. I don't care what you wore, what you dressed like, who you were married to, how much money you had. And that's when it started making sense to me. It's right here. In 1939 when they wrote this. This is the godsend for many of us. You know, I'm blessed because I not only have you folks who brought the message of hope to me when I didn't have any. I was filled with denial, my ability to go ahead and tell you the truth about what was going on. You know, I'd rather take the Fifth Amendment and tell you the truth. Okay? Half measures avail us nothing. That's all I knew was half measures. You know, I had a lot of motives for being here, and they were all the wrong ones. You know, I stay sober because I found a life that was amazing. I carry this little book around with me, and I use it every day. I don't mean to offend anybody by some of the language I may use. I'm not going to use vulgarities, by the way, but I'm going to use the way I express myself as the way I express myself. I'm not making excuses for it. But that's exactly who I am. Okay, I got here not wanting to be here. I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous through this book. This is the only book that we had in the hospital. And I stole mine, by the way, when I left there. You see? But I've since bought a lot of them for a lot of newcomers since then, because guilt can eat you alive, man. You know what I mean? Not because I wanted to, because I was guilty. And so I bought a lot of these for the newcomers and let them know exactly what I had done. That's what my sponsor told me to do when I first got here. He said, how often did you drink, Larry? I said, every day. He said, I want to see your little aha in a meeting every day. He said, I am honored to sponsor you. He says, but this works. I want you to know right now this works because it's not your idea, okay? And we'll start from there. And you know, step one is getting out of powerless over alcohol and my life is becoming manageable. Anybody can do that. That's like pleading the fifth. I can admit anything and I have to believe it. Hey, if it makes you happy, then I'll admit it. I didn't know the difference. There was a difference between admitting and accepting. You know, I just played it off. Well, my sponsor told me to get involved in my own recovery. He wasn't kidding around, man. I mean, he meant it. You know, he gave me assignments to do. And he didn't tell me how to get sober. He showed me how to get sober. Now, these are the steps we took, Larry, not Red, which I suggested as a program of recovery. And he said, we start with step one. Can you admit that you're powerless over alcohol? You know, I was doing a four-step inventory right then and there, you know, and I was saying no to a lot of things until I became honest with myself. I don't know how many of you folks had a problem with honesty, but I did. You know, I could tell you that I had a wonderful career and I was successful at just about everything I did. But I was ashamed to tell you that, you know, when I took a drink, I couldn't guarantee you what I was going to do. I didn't want to admit that. I wouldn't tell you that I would tell all these stories to my wife that why I was not home. You know, she got tired at the end of me saying that I didn't know why and where I was at when I was drinking. Because I would have blackouts. I literally would have blackouts. Now I'm in San Diego. I had a passport in my wallet, thank God, for a lot of things. Because I would drink sometimes in San Diego and wake up in another country. I swear to God, okay? But I had people covering me all the time. Somebody would be backing me up. I did a good job while I was at the job, but, you know, I had a lot of people cover for me. Oh, they were lying, what they were doing. I call it covering. And it came a point in time when I had to admit that I had a problem. And nothing happens in my life until I admit something is wrong. I don't care what it is. You know, I could drive my car with flats if I want to for as long as the rims will hold up. But, you know, if I don't stop and fix them, I'm going to have a flat tire. That's just the deal, see? So I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. You know, and who wants to... The 12x12 talks about step one. Who wants to admit complete defeat? None of us. I try to drive that home to the newcomer especially. I'm not going to tell you what I did. I read that in the 12x12. And they told me that, you know, hey, that's me. I didn't want to admit that I had faults. I didn't want to admit that, you know, I could water things down to make it look good for myself. My grand sponsor, who has 63 years of recovery right now, told me, rest assured, when speaking of myself, I'm never going to put myself in bad light. That's who I was when I got here. You know, I was never going to tell you the truth. Half-truths, yeah. Omission, a lot of it. You know, I got to the point where my sponsor told me, I think it's about time we find this power greater than ourselves there. Well, I hadn't got it. I went to a parochial school system. You know, there's a chapter here for you heathens called the Agnostics. That wasn't me. That wasn't me. And then I had a little old lady who told me one night at a meeting, She says, Larry, we can't get so spiritual the world no earthly good. We all have faults, you know. I admitted to God, to myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. How difficult is that? But being raised in a parochial school system, you know, every Saturday I was kneeling there in the little box with the priest, telling him what I'd done that week, and next week I was going to do the same thing, you know. But for at least a weekend, I was up there, you know. It don't work that way at home. You know, my wife really got tired of listening to me say, you know what, if you can't guarantee what you're going to do when you drink, why are you drinking? And I said, you know what, I got to think about that. You know, in the foreword of our book, it talks about the first 100 that got here. I am one of them also. I don't know, after 2 million of us. When I got here, it was something like about 700. Well, that's when the third edition was written. I think it was 76. There was something like 750,000 recovering alcoholics. There are over 2 million of us today. 2,000,001 with me. I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. I'm one of these persons who is not afraid of much anymore. That sounds cocky, doesn't it? But it's true. I don't have to lie. I don't have to drink. I don't have to run anymore. I don't have to dodge reality. I don't have to go ahead and be a part of something that I used to think that I was so terrible at. That's living. You know? I drank enough to get here. That's what I try to tell people. I can remember when I had fun when I was drinking. I don't glamorize it. But at the beginning, I drank all over the world, man. All over. Not just some jump-off junction place in North Carolina. You know what I mean? All over the world. You know, but I also stopped with or without a solemn oath many, many times because it was getting in the way of my job, though I didn't want to admit that. I was blessed to have people who didn't co-sign a whole lot of my story, who are honest enough to tell me the truth. You know, I have little notes that I make to myself when I read this book. And I tell myself, you know, that the stories that I've read throughout the time that I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know anything original. I swear to the Lord, I don't know anything that's original. I like to think it's mine, but it's not. You know, I went to the 77th Founders Day. Thank goodness I finally moved out to Virginia, where I got to go to Akron, Ohio for the 77th Founders Day. And tears came to my eyes, man, when I sat there at that table with one of my sponsees. And remember what Roy told me when I first got here. He said, one more drink, he'd have missed all this. That applies to a lot of things that happened in my life. You know, I, a long, long time ago when I was an active duty member of the armed forces, I received some divorce papers from my first wife while I was in the combat zone. And I had to write a letter, or at least my commanding officer wrote a letter, telling them that Mr. Romero would not be available on this particular date for that hearing that you want in Superior Court in before the County of Los Angeles. And I had no idea what was happening in my life. And there wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. A except realize that there is something. Once again, I found out that, you know, lack of power is my dilemma. I was angry. I was distrustful. It's like all the things that happen to you when people throw curveballs at you. You don't have the answers for it. You know, why me? Why me? And I hated it when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would listen to you folks who got a few 24 hours under your belt. Well, you realize that all your failures is kind of a good way to grow. You know, I got here through the grace of God and the fellowship. My wife, who passed away 19 years ago of cancer, is looking down on me to this day, and she's saying, see, I told you you had a problem. That was a long time ago. A long, long time ago. You know, my problem is the fact that I had this thing called alcoholism. I did not know what to do with it. They told me that if I was to pray, maybe something would happen. Well, I knew how to pray. I had a God of my understanding. But nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. And Bill Storia talks about him saying, you know, hey, you can pray all you want, but don't pray for yourself. And if you pray for yourself, make it so that it's because you want to help somebody. That your prayers are for the purpose of helping another recovering or human being, period. I believe that today. And here this pious individual who thought he was somewhat of a spiritual giant, you know, after reading some of the literature that I tried to expound on that I knew so well, you know, I get to the place called the chapter to the agnostics. And then they told me, and I say this to you, some of you folks who have been here for a little while, or some of you folks who are relatively new. If at the beginning of this little deal that I started with, that alcohol was but a symptom, a bottle was but a symptom, something is wrong here. Something is wrong here. You know, I try to keep it in context. He said, you know, admitted I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable. And throughout the book, it's always making reference to lack of power as my dilemma. Don't worry about it. You're powerless. You're powerless. A lot of folks don't realize this. This lack of power was my dilemma. Was this past tense. I haven't got it my own understanding today. That's not my problem anymore. If I put it in God's hands. That's just a little nugget for you, okay? And that's what happened to me. They told me that, you know, the chapter of the agnostics, it says that lack of power was our dilemma. So, and how do you find this power greater than yourself? And the next line tells you that's what this book is all about. And if you haven't read it, you don't know what I'm talking about. All what I'm saying right now is Greek to you. At least as far as Alcoholics Anonymous goes. I'm not saying that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only way to get sober or sane. But it's the only way I know how. And that's what brings us all here together tonight, is to share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. You know, I believe that, you know, in the chapter of the solutions, you know, we're a bunch of folks who ordinarily wouldn't mingle. You know, we wouldn't mix. You know, look who's sitting next to you. You know, I don't know what your backgrounds are. You know, in reality, though, we wouldn't mix because, you know, we're not only self-centered and self-righteous and selfish. That's hurrah for me and not so good for you, okay? But that's how I came here. I had to admit that in my own life. I was incapable of being honest with you or with another human being. And so I had to find this power greater myself. My license plate, by the way, if you're ever in Fredericksburg, my license plate says BBPG21. Big book, page 21. I'm not real alcoholic. I'm the Jekyll and Hyde personality you've been talking about. You see, I could put on all the faces in the world. When I drank, I just changed. I swear to the Lord, I just changed right in front of you. I could be drinking and all of a sudden, boy, I'm looking at Ricardo Montalban. You know what I mean? I could dance like John Travolta, you know, I could sing like Sinatra, and I could fight like Joe Frazier, you know what I'm saying? Nothing was impossible for me when I drank. I could be anything I wanted to be. It didn't last very long until I passed out, and I woke up with yours truly looking at myself again, filled with remorse and guilt, and my wife not knowing where I'm at. And I go home with the same excuse again. At the end, that was happening more and more and more and more. So after finding this place called Alcoholics Anonymous, they recommended very strongly before I got out of the hospital to find a sponsor, and I found one of them. As a matter of fact, I found him and his wife. They were seemed to be at every meeting they were taking me to. And this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. I believe that. Do I take your inventory at meetings? You betcha, Red Rider. You know, I'm not there to co-sign for you, but I'm certainly there to go ahead and take your inventory. I tell you what, I'm not kidding. Hey, this is what I do. You know, you can tell me a story this year, and next year you change it, and I'll come up to you after the meeting. I'm going to tell you, you remember when you told me so-and-so? What happened, man? But I met this man by the name of Roy Nordstrom. He's dead now. He died after my 25th anniversary. And his wife, Sally, you know, they took me under their arm. They didn't baby me. They went ahead and were honest with me. And I wanted my family life to be like theirs. They went to the beach parties. They went to dances. They went to here and there. And they went to meetings, and they were laughing, and they go to lunches, and they go to meetings after the meetings, you know. And I'd go home and I'd argue, where you been? How come? Where you been? I was having coffee till 11. You got to go to work tomorrow. And I didn't have the guts to tell her, well, it's better than being drunk. I wanted to tell her that, but I didn't. And so after a while, she found out that, you know, being with my fellow recovering alcoholics is what I did in order to keep me sane. Stopping drinking was just a little bit. And thank God for this man called a sponsor. He told me to get the writing. In the book of 12 by 12, it talks about us writing an inventory. We didn't have the 12 by 12 in the hospital. Like I said, all we had was this here, the three columns in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It had to do with a lot of fear. Fear, 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 fear. I did that. And I shared it with Roy. And Roy never told me, ever in the 25 years that he sponsored me, that he told me it's going to get better. He never told me that. He told me it's going to get different. Your life is going to get different, Larry. And it did. It got worse. After I stopped drinking, it got worse. I didn't know what to do. I had nothing to quell the anxieties I had, that need to prove something. I don't know what it was that I was always trying to prove, but it was something. And I didn't have that libation to get me there. And so it got worse. He told me to start writing this inventory. I did that. There's another book that I read a lot in the morning when I do my meditations. I recommend it for people who have a little bit of time, and I realize that most of us have families and kids and jobs, and I used to was like that. I don't have all that anymore. But it talks about these this anger and resentments that I had. There's a book called Living Sober. And in the book Living Sober, on page 37, it gives me the answers to my problems. If I want to go ahead and incorporate these things in my life. Here are just a few things have to do with resentments. And I view these every day when I read these books. You know, if I have a resentment or I have anger, you look down and it says that they take different shapes and different colors. There's reasons why I am that way, though I don't want to admit it. I don't want to admit it. On page 86, I read the same thing. It says, get rid of that selfishness and self-centeredness, especially self-pity. That gets me in trouble all the time. And it gets me angry. Then I go to the book called Living Sober, and under the topic of anger, it says that they have different colors and different shapes, and they're called intolerance, George. Yeah. I'm probably the most intolerant person George has ever met. But I'm full of love, George, huh? He says contempt. You know, there's another little passage that says contempt prior to investigation in our book. We have the answers. You just don't know the problem like I do, see? I have the answers. That's how smart I am. Envy. Jealousy. These are some of the shapes that anger takes. I didn't know what they were. Distrust. Suspicion. You know, it's hard. It's hard to live like that. It's just hard to live like that. I've given thought a lot to why is it that some of us stay here and some of us fall by the wayside. You know, alcohol is but a symptom. I have sponsored a lot of folks since I've been sober. And I'm here to tell you, I haven't gotten one of them sober. Not one. I haven't gotten one of them drunk either, by the way. I don't take credit for either one of them. That's God's job. My job is to pass on to them what was passed on to me in a loving way if possible, which is difficult for me sometimes to be loving when you're doing everything wrong and won't listen, you hardhead. Okay? But you got to be loving. You got to be tolerant. They tell me that every day, man, every day. So I come here, you know, and I say, well, this is what I did. This is what's happened to me. This woman who got me to Alcoholics Anonymous because she thought I had a drinking problem. You know, wanted a family. She was also a naval officer. And I told her, I don't want a family. I don't know. I was married before. I have two children from my previous marriage, and I treated them two children like recruits, because that's the way I was. I didn't have another way of living. That's all I knew. You do it my way, and don't backtalk me. You know, my father would just. My friend over here was asking me during dinner tonight, "Was your father strict?" Well, there was 13 of us. He wasn't strict. He just had a look at us. That was enough. You understand what a look is? And if you went like that, you better hit the trail, dude, okay? And that's how I was raised. You know, they were loving parents. They did as much as they possibly could for me. You know, I held my father in very high esteem. And all he ever wanted for me was the best for me. And he passed away right after my mother did, because they were married for 63 years, and he just died of what's the use? He had no partner. I didn't know that I was going to experience that, by the way, in my own lifetime. And so this woman that I'm telling you that got me to Alcoholics Anonymous gave me two sons. I get real emotional when I talk about them two dudes, because they never saw me take a drink. They never saw me take a drink. What they did see was a father who cared. They saw a father who was supportive. They saw a father who tried his very, very best to give them what I could possibly afford in the form of support. And they grew up to be very healthy, physical, academically sound students. Both of them were California State cross-country champions. My kids. Yeah. In 2000, the year 2000, I got to watch my sons. I tell you what, that's hard to do. I was from them special forces guys myself, but I saw my son graduate from SEAL training, and I saw three Medal of Honor winners popping to salute and telling him, welcome to the teams. And where's Daddy? Daddy's up in the bleachers crying. That's my kid. 2 years later, the younger one, he's graduating from the Air Force Academy. The Vice President of the United States saluting him as he's passing in review, you know. Second Lieutenant in the Air Force. I had nothing to do with it, except be supportive. You know, you often think that, what good am I? Well, you'd be amazed when you think about those people around you, how they perceive you, how they try to go ahead and emulate you sometimes. God has given me a gift today. You know, there's a little gal yesterday, and I don't know where she got it, and she put a heart, you know, a Valentine's heart on my chest right here that's stuck. And I didn't pay attention to it till after the meeting, and I'm looking like that, and here's this little heart with the diamond on it. And this little gal came up to me and told me, you're not so tough, are you? You're just a big sissy. Which is true. You know, your exterior can be all kinds of what people think you are, you know. A lot of people think I'm angry because I believe in what I do. I believe in this gift that was given to me. I do not play with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, what a gift. Every time I turn around, I think about, you know, what they told me, that one more drink I'd have missed your graduations. You know, I'd have missed being at the interment of my wife's ashes, you know. I'd have missed a lot of things. You know, I sold everything in San Diego, and it was time after they'd grown and gone, and I had a big four-bedroom home, and I said, what the hell am I doing here? So I moved out to the land of the golf courses out here. I haven't hit a lick of a snake since 2006. I don't have a job, and I don't want a job. You know? As long as I'm sober and I realize that all I have is today, that today is a gift, and I don't take that for granted. I tell people all the time, I've been overpaid because I woke up this morning, man. I get to do this all over again tomorrow if God wakes me up. Huh? Yeah. Me. You know, the greatest gift I have is doing what God has put in front of me. You know, so often or not, people talk about the 164 pages of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I recommend strongly that you read that first story, Dr. Bob's Nightmare. That's my favorite story in all the book. In all this book. There's a lot of things from the time that Evie told Bob that he found religion. That's why he didn't want to drink. And all about this bright light that he that Bill saw when he left the hospital just before he said he ain't never going to drink again, you know. And you've often heard some of these people who are wordsmiths say, you know, I never saw a bright light or a burning bush, but I felt the heat, you know. I understand that kind of talk because I'm an alcoholic. But for some of you folks who may or may have not, and I'm not insulting your intelligence, believe me, what I have is a gift that's been given to me. And it is a gift that I would like to share with people every place I go. And when I say that anything I know is only because it was given to me by another recovering alcoholic. And here's the good part about this story. The best part of Dr. Bob's Nightmare. If you haven't read it, it's here. Just read page 181. And don't even read the whole page. Just read the last paragraph. I don't know that much about anything other than the fact of what's in this literature, what's been given to me, and what's been told to me that works in your life. And here's what Dr. Bob said in the last paragraph of this nightmare he's talking about. And he's talking to me. I swear to God, this is me. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in this book, not the King James, not the Gideon, not none of these other deals, this book. See? I feel sorry for you. If you still think you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that's your affair. Now, he's talking to me. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and all, I don't know how many of you in this room want to do that, and it's really none of my business. I do. And sincerely feel that you must have some help. Look around you. Stick out your hand to somebody. That's what he's saying. You know, don't isolate. get out there and do it to it. We know you. We have the answer for you. This one wants to make me cry. I swear to God, it says it never fails. It never fails. I fail. You ever listen to somebody bad-mouthing Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, I went there and I got the chips and I went 30 days and I didn't let it happen. Shut up before I bust you in the mouth. And I'm supposed to be spiritual, you know? But that's what happens to me. That's the real me. Never mind this sanctimonious individual thinks he's somebody, okay? It never fails. If you go about it with half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink, just half the zeal. You put just half the effort. Stick out your hand to another alcoholic, even if you don't like him. Say, hey, you know, what's going on today? You know, we're all worth something. So often now we get here and we tell each other, what's the use? Nobody cares. We're the victim. Nobody understands. I'm going to share something with you that... It's hard to talk about, but it's necessary because there are some military vets in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go up to Richmond and work with some of those young people who are younger than my boys. And both of my boys are combat veterans also. And they came home. One of them is a professor at USC right now. And the other one's chasing pirates out on the Black Sea. Okay? But I work with these young people up at Richmond in rehab. And it just tears my heart out. A lot of them are suffering from what I suffered, PTSD. I didn't know I had it. I had 3 tours in the Republic of Vietnam. I did not know I had it. I was extremely angry. You think I'm intolerant now? You should have saw me way back in 1960. You mad at me? You know, I had this sponsor who told me, very honestly, he said, Larry, you know what? I can help you with your alcoholism. And I say this to you folks who are vets, who maybe, just maybe, somebody hasn't been honest with you. You might be suffering from PTSD and don't know it. He told me, I think you need some outside help. So for 2 years, I'm an alcoholic. I hear all these people snivel sometime, you know, about what it is that they have. I'm going to give you a short documentary of yours truly, who I slept with last night. I slept with alcoholism. I slept with PTSD. I slept with sugar diabetes. I've had 2 heart attacks, 2 strokes. I don't know how long I'm going to last. It's really none of my business. We're all temporary anyway, so just stop beating your chest about who you are, you know? It's true. I don't know when I'm going to go. That's who I slept with every night, and I'm going to bed with the same people tonight. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to tell you, Father, thank you for waking me up, man. All I have is today. And please, please put people in my life who are like me. I don't want to be different anymore. So I'm going to leave you folks with this little thought that, you know, that was so terrific, I think I'd still be out there. And there is a lyric to a song that was written by Chuck Mangione. Some of you folks may be music lovers, some of you may not be. And there was a song called Feels So Good. And the lyric went like this. I have it on my wall today. And I heard it, and I just broke down. I went down to the beach, and I cried, I swear to God, for about 4 hours. And I'd heard the melody of the song, but I didn't know it had words. And this is what the lyric is. There's no place for me to hide from all the pain I have inside, and cried these tears that I have known, because I needed just to hear that special something. I wanted to hear that somebody cared. So I'll leave you with that. Thank you much. All right.